She found it with her hands, expecting the power cord, but was rewarded with the spongy nothingness of the empty air tube. It no longer offered her air, but it did lead the way out. Pulling one direction gathered slack, so she tried the other way. The hose went taut. She pulled herself into the stairs again, bounced away with a grunt, and kept gathering line. The hose led up and around the corner, and she found herself pulling, reaching out an arm to fend off the blind assaults from walls, ceilings, steps, bumping and floating up 6 flights, a battle for every inch, a struggle that seemed to take forever. By the time she reached the top, she was out of breath and panting. And then she realized she wasn't out of breath, she was out of air. She had burned through whatever remained of the suit. Hundreds of feet of exhausted hose lay invisible behind her, sucked dry. She tried the radio again as she pulled herself through the corridor, her suit rising slowly toward the ceiling, not nearly as buoyant as before.
Solo, can you hear me?
The thought of how much water still lay above her, all those levels of it pressing down, hundreds of feet of solid flood, it was suffocating. What did she have left in the suit? Minutes? How long would it take to swim or float to the top of the stairwell? Much, much longer. There were probably oxygen bottles down one of those pitch-black hallways, but how would she find them? This wasn't her home. She didn't have time to look. All she had was a mad drive to reach the stairwell, to race to the surface. She pulled and kicked her way around the last corner and into the main hallway, her muscles screaming from being used in new ways, from fighting the stiff and bulky suit, the viscous atmosphere, when she realized the inky water had lightened to something nearer charcoal instead of pitch black. There was a green tint to her blindness. Juliet scissored her legs and gathered in the tubing, bumping along the ceiling, sensing the security station and stairwell ahead. She had traveled corridors like these thousands of times, twice in utter darkness, when main breakers had failed. She remembered staggering through hallways just like this, telling co-workers it would be okay, to just stay still, she'd handle it. Now she tried to do the same for herself, to lie and say it would all be okay, to just keep moving, don't panic. The dizziness began to set in as she reached the security gate. The water ahead glowed lime green and looked so inviting, an end to the blind scrambling, no more of her helmet bumping into what she couldn't see. Her arm briefly tangled with the power cord. She shook it free and hauled herself toward that tall column of water ahead, that flooded straw, that sunken stairway. Before she got there, she had her first spasm, like a hiccup, a violent and automatic gasp for air. She lost her grip on the line and felt her chest nearly burst from the effort of breathing. The temptation to shed her helmet and take a deep inhalation of water overpowered her. Something in her mind insisted she could breathe the stuff. "Just give her a chance," it said. One lungful of the water, anything other than the toxin she had exhaled into her suit, a suit designed to keep such things out. Her throat spasmed again, and she started coughing in her helmet as she pulled her way into the stairwell. The rope was there, held down by the wrench. She swam for it, knowing it was too late. As she yanked down, she felt the slack coming. The loose end of the rope spiraled in sinking knots toward her. She drifted slowly toward the surface, very little of the built-up pressure inside her suit. No quick ride to the top. Another throat spasm, and the helmet had to come off. She was getting dizzy. Would soon pass out. Juliet fumbled for the clasps on her metal collar. The sense of déjà vu was overpowering. Only this time, she wasn't thinking clearly. She remembered the soup, the fetid smell, crawling out of the dark walk-in. She remembered the knife. Patting her chest, she felt the handle sticking out from its sheath. Some of her other tools had wiggled out of their pockets. They dangled from lines meant to keep them from getting lost, lines that now just made them a nuisance, turned them into more weights holding her down. She rose gently up the stairwell, her body shivering from the cold and convulsing from the absence of breathable air. Forgetting all reason, all sense of where she was, she became singularly aware of the noxious fog hanging all around her head, trapped by that dome, killing her. She aimed the blade into the first latch in her collar and pressed hard. There was a click and a fine spray of cold water against her neck. A feeble bubble lurched out of her suit and tumbled up her visor. Groping for the other latch, she shoved the knife into it, and the helmet popped off, water flooding over her face, filling her suit, shocking her with the numbing cold and dragging her, sinking, back down to where she'd come from. The freezing cold jolted Juliet to her senses. She blinked her lids against the sting of the green water and saw the knife in her hands, the dome of her helmet spinning through the murk like a bubble heading in the wrong direction. She was slowly sinking after it, no air in her lungs, hundreds of feet of water pressing down. She jabbed the knife into the wrong pocket on her chest, saw drivers and spanners hanging by their cords from her struggle through the blackness, and kicked toward the hose that still led through four levels of water toward the surface. Bubbles of air leaked out of her collar and across her neck, up through her hair. Juliet seized the hose and stopped her plummet, pulled upward, her throat screaming for an intake of air, of water, of anything. The urge to swallow was overpowering. She started to pull herself up when she saw, in the undersides of the steps, a shimmering flash of hope. Trapped bubbles, maybe from her descent. They moved like liquid solder in the hollow undersides of the spiral staircase. Juliet made a noise in her throat, a raw cry of desperation, of effort. She pawed through the water, fighting the sinking of the suit, and grasped the railing of the submerged stairway. Pulling herself up and kicking off of the railing, she made it to the nearest shimmer of bubbles, grabbed the edge of the stairs, and pushed her mouth right up to the metal underside of the step. She inhaled a desperate gasp of air and sucked in a lot of water in the process. She dove her head below the surface and coughed into the water, which brought the burn of fluids invading her nose. She nearly sucked in a lungful of water, felt her heart racing and ready to burst out of her chest, stuck her face back up against the wet, rusty underside of that step, and with her lips pursed and trembling, managed to take in a gentle sip of air. The tiny flashes of light in her vision subsided. She lowered her head and blew out, away from the step, watching the bubbles of her exhalation rise, and then pressed her face close for another taste. Air. She blinked away underwater tears of effort, of frustration, of relief. Peering up the twisted maze of metal steps, many of them moving like flexible mirrors where the trapped air was stirred by her mad gyrations, she saw a pathway like no other. She kicked off and took a few steps at a time, pulling herself hand over hand in the gaps between, drinking tiny bubbles of air out of the several-inch hollow beneath each tread, praising the tight welds where the diamond plate steps had been joined many hundreds of years ago. The steps had been boxed in for strength, to handle the traffic of a million impacts of boots, and now they held the gaseous overflow from her descent. Her lips brushed each one, tasting metal and rust, kissing her salvation. The green emergency lights all around her remained steady, so Juliet never noticed the landings drifting past. She just concentrated on taking five steps with each breath, six steps, a long stretch with hardly any air, another mouthful of water where the bubble was too thin to breathe, A lifetime of rising against the tug of her flooded suit and dangling tools. No thought for stopping and cutting things free. Just kick and pull, hand over hand, up the undersides of the steps. A deep and steady pull of air. Suck this shallow step dry. Don't exhale into the steps above. Easy now. 5 more steps. It was a game, like hop. 5 squares and a leap. Don't cheat. Mind the chalk. She was good at this. Getting better. And then a foul burn on her lips. The taste of water growing toxic. Her head coming up into the underside of a step and breaking through a film of gas stench and slimy oil. Juliet blew out her last breath and coughed, wiping at her face, her head still trapped below the next step. She wheezed and laughed and pushed herself away, banging her head on the sharp steel edge of the stairs. She was free! She briefly bobbed below the surface as she swam around the railing, her eyes burning from the oil and gas floating on top. Splashing loudly, crying for solo, she made it over the railing. With her padded and shivering knees, she finally found the steps. She'd made it! Clinging to the dry treads above her, neck bent, gasping and wheezing, her legs numb, she tried to cry out that she made it, but it escaped as a whimper. She was cold. She was freezing. Her arms shivered as she pulled herself up the quiet steps. No rattle from the compressor, no arms reaching to assist her. Solo? Solo? She crawled the half-dozen treads to the landing and rolled onto her back. Some of her tools were caught on the steps below. She crawled the half-dozen treads to the landing and rolled onto her back. Some of her tools were caught on the steps below, tugging at her where they were tied off to her pockets. Water drained out of her suit and splashed down her neck, pooled by her head, ran into her ears. She turned her head. She needed to get the freezing suit off, and found Solo. He was lying on his side, eyes shut, blood running down his face, some of it already caked dry. Solo? Her hand was a shivering blur as she reached and shook him. What had he done to himself? Hey, wake the fuck up. Her teeth were chattering. She grabbed his shoulder and gave him a violent shake. Solo, I need help. One of his eyes parted a little. He blinked a few times, then bent double and coughed, blood flecking the landing by his face. Help, she said. She fumbled for the zipper at her back, not realizing it was Solo who needed her. Solo coughed into his hand, then rolled over and settled once again to his back. The blood on his head was still flowing from somewhere, fresh tracks trickling across what had dried some time before.
Solo!
He groaned. Juliet pulled herself closer. She could barely feel her body. He whispered something, his voice a rasp on the edge of silence.
Hey!
She brought her face close to his, could feel her lips swollen and numb, could still taste the gasoline.
My name.
He coughed a mist of red. One arm lifted from the landing a few inches as if to cover his mouth, but it never had a chance of getting there.
Not my name,
he said again. His head lolled side to side, and Juliet finally realized that he was badly injured. Her mind began to clear enough to see what state he was in.
Hold still,
she groaned.
Solo, I need you to be still.
She tried to push herself up, to will herself the strength to move. Solo blinked and looked at her, his eyes glassy, blood tinting the gray in his beard the color crimson.
Not Solo,
he said, his voice straining.
My name's Jimmy.
More coughing. His eyes rolled up into the back of his head.
And I don't think.
His eyelids sagged shut, and then he squinted in pain.
Don't think I was.
Stay with me,
Juliet said, hot tears cutting down her frozen face.
Don't think I ever was alone,
he whispered, the lines on his face relaxing, his head sagging to the cold steel landing. 18. Silo 18. The pot on the stove bubbled noisily, steam rising off the surface, tiny drops of water leaping to their hissing freedom over the edge. Lucas shook a pinch of tea leaves out of the resealable tin and into the tiny strainer. His hands were shaking as he lowered the little basket into his mug. As he lifted the pot, some water spilled directly on the burner. The drops made spitting sounds and gave off a burnt odor. He watched Bernard out of the corner of his eye as he tilted the boiling water through the leaves.
I just don't understand, he said, holding the mug with both hands, allowing the heat to penetrate his palms. How could anybody... How could you do something like this on purpose?
He shook his head and peered into his mug where a few intrepid shreds of leaf had already gotten free and swam outside the basket. He looked up at Bernard.
And you knew about this? How could you know about this?
Bernard frowned. He rubbed his mustache with one hand, the other resting in the belly of his coveralls.
I wish I didn't know it, he told Lucas. And now you see why some facts, some bits of knowledge have to be snuffed out as soon as they form. Curiosity would blow across such embers and burn this silo to the ground.
He looked down at his boots.
I pieced it together much as you did, just knowing what we have to know to do this job. This is why I chose you, Lucas. You and a few others have some idea what's stored on these servers. You're already prepped for learning more. Can you imagine if you told any of this to someone who wears red or green to work every day?
Lucas shook his head.
It's happened before, you know. Silo 10 went down like that. I sat back there.
He pointed toward the small study with the books, the computer, the hissing radio.
And I listened to it happen. I listened to a colleague's shadow broadcast his insanity to anyone who would listen.
Lucas studied his steeping tea. A handful of leaves swam about on hot currents of darkening water. The rest remained in the grip of the imprisoning basket.
That's why the radio controls are locked up, he said. And it's why you are locked up.
Lucas nodded. He'd already suspected as much.
How long were you kept in here?
He glanced up at Bernard and an image flashed in his mind, one of Sheriff Billings inspecting his gun while he visited with his mother. Had they been listening in? Would he have been shot, his mother too, if he'd said anything?
I spent just over 2 months down here until my caster knew I was ready, that I had accepted and understood everything I'd learned.
He crossed his arms over his belly.
I really wish you hadn't asked the question, hadn't put it together so soon. It's much better to find out when you're older.
Lucas pursed his lips and nodded. It was strange to talk like this with someone his senior, someone who had known so much more, was so much wiser. He imagined this was the sort of conversation a man had with his father, only not about the planned and carried-out destruction of the entire world. Lucas bent his head and breathed in the smell of the steeping leaves. The mint was like a direct line through the trembling stress, a strike to the calm pleasure center in the deep regions of his brain. He inhaled it and held it, finally letting it out. Bernard crossed to the small stove in the corner of the storeroom and started making his own mug.
How did they do it? Lucas asked. To kill so many? Do you know how they did it? Bernard shrugged. He tapped the tin with one finger, shaking out a precise amount of tea into another basket.
They might be still doing it, for all I know. Nobody talks about how long it's supposed to go on. There's fear that small pockets of survivors might be holed up elsewhere around the globe. Operation 50 is completely pointless if anyone else survives. The population has to be homogeneous.
The man I spoke to, he said we were it. Just the 50 silos.
47, Bernard said. And we are it, as far as we know. It's difficult to imagine anyone else being so well prepared. But there's always a chance. It's only been a few hundred years.
A few hundred? Lucas leaned back against the counter. He lifted his tea, but the mint was losing its power to reach him. So hundreds of years ago, we decided...
They.
Bernard filled his mug with still steaming water.
They decided. Don't include yourself. Certainly don't include me.
Okay, they decided to destroy the world. Wipe everything out. Why? Bernard set his mug down on the stove to let it steep. He pulled off his glasses, wiped the steam off them, then pointed them toward the study, toward the wall with the massive shelves of books.
Because of the worst parts of our legacy, that's why. At least that's what I think they would say if they were still alive.
He lowered his voice and muttered,
"Which they aren't, thank God."
Lucas shuddered. He still didn't believe anyone would make that decision, no matter what the conditions were like. He thought of the billions of people who supposedly lived beneath the stars all those hundreds of years ago. Nobody could kill so many. How could anyone take that much life for granted?
And now we work for them, Lucas spat.
He crossed to the sink and pulled the basket out of his mug, set it on the stainless steel to drain. He cautioned a sip, slurping lest it burn him.
You tell me not to include us, but we're part of this now.
No.
Bernard walked away from the stove and stood in front of the small map of the world hanging above the dinette.
We weren't any part of what those crazy fucks did. If I had those guys, the men who did this, if I had them in a room with me, I'd kill every last goddamned one of them.
Bernard smacked the map with his palm.
I'd kill them with my bare hands.
Lucas didn't say anything. Didn't move.
They didn't give us a chance. That's not what this is.
He waved at the room around them.
These are prisons, cages, not homes. Not meant to protect us, but meant to force us, by pain of death, to bring about their vision.
Their vision for what?
For a world when we're too much the same, when we're too tightly invested in each other to waste our time fighting, to waste our resources guarding those same limited resources.
He lifted his mug and took a noisy sip.
That's my theory, at least. From decades of reading. The people who did this, they were in charge of a powerful country that was beginning to crumble. They could see the end, their end, and it scared them suicidal. As the time began to run out, over decades, keep in mind, they figured they had one chance to preserve themselves, to preserve what they saw as their way of life. And so, before they lost the only opportunity they might ever have, they put a plan into motion.
Without anybody knowing? How?
Bernard took another sip. He smacked his lips and wiped his mustache.
Who knows? Maybe nobody could believe it anyway. Maybe the reward for secrecy was inclusion. They built other things in factories bigger than you can imagine that nobody knew about. They built bombs in factories like these that I suspect played a part in all this. All without anyone knowing. And there are stories in the legacy about men from a long time ago in a land with great kings, like mayors with many more people to rule. When these men died, elaborate chambers were built below the earth and filled with treasure. It required the work of hundreds of men. Do you know how they kept the locations of these chambers a secret?
Lucas lifted his shoulders. They paid the workers a ton of chits? Bernard laughed. He pinched a stray tea leaf off his tongue.
They didn't have chits. No, they made perfectly sure these men would keep quiet. They killed them.
Their own men? Lucas glanced toward the room with the books, wondering which tin this story was in.
It's not beyond us to kill, to keep secrets.
Bernard's face hardened as he said this.
It'll be a part of your job one day, when you take over.
Lucas felt a sharp pain in his gut as the truth of this hit. He caught the first glimmer of what he'd truly signed on for. It made shooting people with rifles seem an honest affair.
We are not the people who made this world, Lucas. But it's up to us to survive it. You need to understand that.
We can't control where we are right now, he mumbled. Just what we do going forward.
Wise words.
Bernard took another sip of tea. Yeah, I'm just beginning to appreciate them. Bernard set his cup in the sink and tucked a hand in the round belly of his coveralls. He stared at Lucas a moment, then looked again to the small map of the world.
Evil men did this, but they're gone. Forget them. Just know this. They locked up their brood as a fucked-up form of their own survival. They put us in this game, a game where breaking the rules means we all die, every single one of us. But living by those rules, obeying them, means we all suffer.
He adjusted his glasses and walked over to Lucas, patted him on the shoulder as he went past.
I'm proud of you, son. You're absorbing this much better than I ever did. Now get some rest. Make some room in your head and heart. Tomorrow, more studies.
He headed toward the study, the corridor, the distant ladder. Lucas nodded and remained silent. He waited until Bernard was gone, the muted clang of distant metal telling him that the grate was back in place, before walking through to the study to gaze up at the big schematic, the one with the silos crossed out. He peered at the roof of Silo 1, wondering just who in the hell was in charge of all this, and whether they too could rationalize their actions as having been foisted upon them, as not really being culpable but just going along with something they'd inherited, a crooked game with rat-shit rules and most everyone kept ignorant and locked up. Who the fuck were these people? Could he see himself being one of them? How did Bernard not see that he was one of them? 19. Silo 18. The door to the generator room slammed shut behind her, dulling the patter of gunfire to a distant hammering. Shirley ran toward the control room on sore legs, ignoring her friends and co-workers asking her what was going on outside. They cowered along the walls and behind the railing from the loud blast and the sporadic gunfire. Just before she reached the control room, she noticed some workers from second shift on top of the main generator, toying with the rumbling machine's massive exhaust system.
I got it,
Shirley wheezed, slamming the control room door shut behind her. Courtney and Walker looked up from the floor. The wide eyes and slack jaw on Courtney's face told Shirley she'd missed something.
What?
She asked.